Well, I'd like us again to look at Psalm 23 as we looked at the first three verses this morning. I'd like us to look at the last three verses and see what David has to say to us concerning our relationship with God. One of the interesting features about this particular psalm is, in actual fact, when you look at the first three verses, he is speaking about God. And then in the last three verses, he is actually speaking to God. And you can see it here, isn't it, where he describes the situation. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness. For his name's sake, he is making statements about God and about his providential care of David. And not only David, of course, but to all of God's people down through the ages. Especially as we saw it this morning, it is applied to the person of the Lord Jesus Christ. He takes up this shepherd theme, especially when he speaks about himself as being the good shepherd who gives his life for the sheep. And in many ways we could have looked back into Psalm 22, couldn't we? Because Psalm 22 actually describes the crucifixion of the Lord Jesus Christ in many, many ways. You can see in verse 1 of that particular psalm, isn't it, where David is saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And yet, isn't these are the words that the Lord Jesus Christ himself says there when he hung on Calvary, isn't it? And so you see, there is this connection between Psalm 22, Psalm 23, and actually going into Psalm 24 as well. But the whole point is this, that here you get David at this particular time as he is describing the ways in which God has been dealing with him down through the ages. And then, as he is contemplating these things, it's almost as if he cannot help but turn to God himself. And then he approaches God and he says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So suddenly he turns to God and he directs his thoughts to God. It's almost as if suddenly there's this spirit of prayer and of praise that come upon him at this particular time. And it's little wonder that we should be surprised at something like this, for how is it that we draw near unto God? How do you and I approach God? Isn't it that it starts when we start to contemplate and think upon God? When James tells us, draw near unto God and God will draw near unto us. How do you and I do it? How do we achieve this? Well, you see, as our minds start to focus upon God and as we start to think upon who God is and we start to think about certain aspects and characteristics about God, it's little wonder then, isn't it, that filters through into our hearts, into our very souls. As we contemplate him and think upon him, by faith then we draw near unto God. We realize something of who God is. And it's almost as if this filtering from our minds into our hearts and into our souls, it draws us out into that living experience and encounter with God. We start to draw near unto God as we think upon God, as we consider him. Our hearts are drawn closer and closer, nearer unto God. And as we approach God, doesn't it? Suddenly we find ourselves moving from the realm of merely considering God into the realm of experiencing God. And the realm of speaking unto God. And this is what is happening with David at this time. He is reminded about what God is like. But he is reminded as well that he has that wonderful privilege, isn't it? That he is allowed to approach unto God. And this is the true spirit of prayer, isn't it? It's not merely that we just shut our eyes and we speak words. But it is a drawing near unto God, for God to draw near unto us, for us to experience and to know something of God being very present with us. And this is what has happened with David at this time. He has drawn near unto God and he is reminded of other things concerning God. And so it's almost as if he's telling God about what God is doing for him. No longer directing his thought and his attention to people like you and I who would read this psalm. But it's almost he's so taken up and absorbed with what God is like. And isn't that our experience sometimes, you know? In our quiet times, perhaps, when we come aside from the world and we start to read the Word of God and as we start to think upon these things, we suddenly find ourselves being drawn closer yet closer unto God. And God becomes a very real person to us in that experience. And so David has to speak about him, isn't it? Not only that he is the God of providence and the God who is dealing with him, but he is the God who at this moment of time can come and draw very near unto his people and draw near and closer to you and I. See, one of the things that David mentions, isn't it, about how God deals with us in our earthly pilgrimage. And if you notice this morning, one of the things that was mentioned, and this comes out in the psalm, that God's the God who is leading us. God's the God who is going before us. And if we are to trust in God, isn't it, to realize, isn't it, that he is the one who, before whom there are no corners, are there? There are no bends in the roads. He is the God who is leading us because he knows exactly what is ever before us. And he is the God who is leading us in this way. And you know, when you start to think about it, isn't it? You know, it's a bit of a strange concept to us to think about a shepherd leading his sheep, isn't it? Because in this country, you know, we have shepherds who drive the sheep, don't they? Remember that program, One Man and His Dog? The shepherd out there, and he's got the dog, and he's whistling, and he's telling the dog what to do, as it were. Don't know how he does it, but somehow he manages to train the dog so that he is looking after the flock and driving the flock and leading and directing the flock. And what you find is, isn't it, that here is this David, even you're saying and speaking about his experience as a shepherd, isn't it? He's talking about God leading, isn't he? He's talking about the shepherd leading. Now, I read to you this morning from John chapter 10. You remember that particular picture that Jesus gives to us, isn't it? Of the shepherd knowing his sheep, and the sheep hear his voice, and they respond to his voice. Why? Because they hear the voice of the shepherd, and they follow him. And I think I've told you this illustration before. Can I love this illustration? Can I remember reading many, many years ago about shepherds out there in the Middle East? It says like this, that in the night period, they would bring all the sheep together and they would put it in the sheepfolds. There'd only be one entrance in and one entrance out. And the shepherd, or somebody who was guarding the sheep, would lie across the entrance point. And he would act as a gate there. The sheep wouldn't come forward because he was lying there, he was protecting the sheep. But then in the morning, what would happen is this, that all the other shepherds who had brought their sheep there, they would be outside the sheepfold, as it were, outside the pen. And there, as the sheep were let loose and let out, and you can imagine them, they're all integrated one with another. And then the shepherds would give out their distinctive note. And the sheep just separated into different flocks. And all the various shepherds would have their different noise or different tone that they would have in the way in which they would call the sheep. And this person, he was out in the Middle East and he saw this happening before him and he was reminded of John chapter 10. The shepherds calling their sheep and the sheep hearing the voice of the shepherd and each sheep going to their different shepherds. And isn't this what Jesus says? My sheep hear my voice and they follow me. They've heard my voice, they know who I am, and they respond to that voice, and as I call them, he says. And then the shepherd would lead the sheep, he would go before them, and the sheep would follow. And here is David saying, you know, he is the one who is leading us. He is the one who is going before us. But this morning when we looked at the opening verses, isn't it? We looked at those great verses, isn't it? He leads us where? Into green pastures. He leads us beside the still waters. It's a very pleasant view, isn't it? You know, the idea of being there, perhaps in a valley which is there with plenty of green pasture land. and a nice meandering river, as it were, or stream running through it, so that the sheep would have food and they would have water. But then he changes somewhat, doesn't he? Because it's not always like that. Because sometimes the way in which God leads us, it doesn't always lead us in those nice pastures, beside those still waters. Sometimes we have to go through dark valleys. Sometimes we have to go through difficulties. Sometimes we have to go through problems. And yet for all of that, it doesn't mean to say that we cease to be the children of God. Do you remember how Paul, writing to the church in Romans, he says like this, isn't he? That they were led by the Spirit. They are the children of God. And you think of Jesus for a moment, isn't it? That it says that when Jesus first appears to his disciples, what happens? He is led of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil for 40 days and 40 nights. Led there by God. Got into that place of temptation. Got into that place of conflict. And sometimes God leads us in areas like that. He brings us into places and into situations that are no longer comfortable to us. We'd much prefer, wouldn't we, to stay in our comfort zones. We'd love to stay in those green pastures by the still waters. We need to feel ourselves enjoying those things. But sometimes God says to us, look, it's not always beneficial for you, because at times you have to go through dark valleys, difficult times. Tests us, and he puts us to the test, doesn't he? And so when he comes into verse 4, isn't he saying, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, or when I walk through these dark, dark valleys. Now I know that we always apply it, don't we, to the state of death. That when death is approaching, I know I've got to pass through this valley, I've got to go through this. But the inference here is far more than that. It's not merely just passing through death. But it's passing through all the trials and all the difficulties that we have to go through in our lives. The picture is one that we are pilgrims in this world, isn't it? And we are going through, we are heading towards the celestial city. We are on this pilgrimage. We don't belong here, but we are going in that direction. And sometimes the road that we travel through takes us through dark valleys. But we don't remain there, do we? The wonderful thing about this verse is there's so many things that, you know, if you stop and ponder it for a minute, you know, you can bring out so many things out of the verse that are just lying there on the surface. You don't even have to dig that deep. Because one of the things that you can see here is, isn't it, that yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That even though we are in that valley, isn't it? The wonderful thing is that we are walking through the valley. We don't remain in the valley. We don't stay there constantly. We might be there for a certain period of time. But the thing about it is this, that we do not stay there all of the time. God does not allow us to remain in the valley. He brings us out, doesn't he? Through the valley, through the darkness, through the difficulty, through the problems of our lives. He doesn't allow us to remain there. Because his leading and his directing, even though sometimes he might take us into a valley like this, he will not allow us to stay in the valley. Because we are going to go through that valley. Why? Because he is with us. That even in this darkness, in this difficult time, in this trial that we find ourselves going through, he will be with us. He will not abandon us to this situation in which we find ourselves. And there are many trials and difficulties that we must go through in life. We aren't on a bed of roses, as it were. We aren't just passing through this world and everything is glorious and wonderful to us. Each and every one of us probably got testimonies, haven't we, of what it's like to go through these dark valleys. I don't know what dark valley you've been through. And you don't know the dark valleys that I've gone through. But there is one thing that is sure and certain. That each and every one of us, if we are a child of God, will go through dark valleys. But the thing is there, that we do not remain in this darkness. We do not stay there. But we are on this mission, as it were. We are on this path, aren't we? And we are walking. And the idea is, isn't it, that when we are walking, we are going forward. We are not stopping. We are not, as it were, taking our camping tent with us. And we're bedding down, as it were. And we're having to remain in the valley. No, we're not. We're walking through it. There is this sense of motion, going onward and forward and not stopping. Until what? Until we come out on the other side of the valley. God does not permit us to remain in this valley perpetually, all through our lives. There is an end to all suffering. That no matter what we experience in our life, isn't it? There is an end to it. Death might be the solution to the problem that we have. We might have an illness that is terminal. Can't get rid of it. But there still has an end to it. Because we do come out on the other side. And we'll see a bit about that afterwards. But the whole point is this, isn't it? Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. So I think I've told you this before as well. That whenever there's a shadow cast, there is always light. Why is there always light there? You cannot have a shadow without light. The shadow is cast because the light is shining. And you see, the light in this case, isn't it? It's God and God being with us. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. That even in this dark and difficult time, in this experience that I'm going through at this moment of time, the wonderful thing is this, that here is this God who has promised to be with me in every situation in which I find myself. And when I'm going through this dark valley, I'm not going through it alone. There is light there because you are with me. God supporting, God strengthening us, helping us in all the dire consequences and the situation in which we find ourselves. You are with me. It's a wonderful thing, isn't it? When we are going through this, to know what it is for God to be with us, for God to draw near to us, for God to assure our hearts and our minds that I will never leave you or forsake you, I will never abandon you or give you up. I will be with you in all the difficulties, all the problems that you have. For you are with me. And you know the wonderful thing about this is that it removes all fear, isn't it? Because here is David saying, and I will fear no evil. I won't fear the consequences. I will not fear what's about and around and about me, he says, because you are with me. And I know that if you were with me, he says, that all of what I fear, all of what goes on in my mind and in my imagination of what could be, that's what happens to us, isn't it? Our minds start to wander and our thoughts are absorbed with what if, what could be. And we start to worry about these things. But then when I turn to God, isn't it? And I see that my solution is not in myself, but it's always found in God. You were with me. And when I look at God, what do I see? Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Here is the solution, he says. On the one hand, my mind is drifting and bringing up all kinds of ideas and thoughts, and there's fear arising in my heart. But then I remind myself that God is with me. And I look at God and I see what? Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now if you look at commentators on this, they'll tell you that it's the staff of the shepherd and the rod, which was like a club, as it were, that he would take with him to protect the sheep from any attack. But let's go a little bit further than that, isn't it? And go past the literal. And can we say like this, that it's only as we contemplate who God is, your rod and your staff, when we realize who God is, the qualities, the attributes that God has. What is on our side is God. And all of what God is. This God who is all powerful. This God who sees all things. This God who knows everything. This God whose absolute power is behind us. Who can separate us from the love of God? Nothing in this whole creation, says the Apostle Paul. Why? Because God is for us. God is for us. And if God is for us, my friend, who can be against us? Who can stand against God? Who can do that which can undermine God and what God is doing for us? Not all the powers of hell can rage war against our soul and destroy us. God is for us. And if God is for us, my friend, there is none that can resist Him. And so He is with us. So when I'm going through this valley, and I'm in this darkness, and I have this fear, and then suddenly I turn to God, for You are with me. And I see the light at the end of the valley. And I see and I know that God is with me. And all of what God is in and of Himself, and all of the qualities and attributes of God are working for my benefit. For your benefit. For the church at large. For the people of God in all kingdoms and nations. All around the world and all around the globe. God is for us. And so you see David saying, look, I'm not going to fear that. I mean, I can apply it to death, can't I? That when we approach death, isn't it? Will God desert us? Of course He won't. When we go through the final valley, when the darkness becomes greater perhaps as we're going along. And yet to remember, isn't it, there's light still shining. For the Lord is with us. You see, the thing is this, isn't it, that even in the conflicts that we go through and the metaphors being changed here in verses 5 and 6, and you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies, you anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. What have we got here, isn't it? It's almost as if David is saying, we'll turn away from the shepherd theme for this moment of time. And suddenly it's almost as if he's bringing us into the banqueting house, isn't it? And he's saying, look, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. How many enemies did David have? David had many, many enemies. Not only was Saul his enemy, isn't it? But you think of Absalom, his own son. And he said, here, he says, in this banqueting house, he says, the enemies of my soul, he says, look on, what can they do? They can't do anything. God has come. And you have prepared this table before me in the presence of my enemies. They can assault my soul, but they cannot destroy me. But even in the midst of all of this, when my enemies are around and about me and surrounding me at this moment of time, in that situation, you still prepare this table before me. That you and I can feast upon things, isn't it, that God gives to us. You think of the world for a moment, isn't it? The world looks on to you and I as the people of God and to the church of Jesus Christ, isn't it? And they look on and the enemies are around and about us. And here we have this feast that is set before us. Now we know it's not a physical feast, is it? But there is this spiritual feast that God gives to us. Do you know when you get the picture of the church in Pergamon, isn't it? And God saying there, I will give you to eat of the hidden manna. There are certain things that happen in the Christian life that the world can't understand. We feast upon things that are not physical, but things that are spiritual. God gives us to eat of the hidden manna. Or you think of Jesus in that John chapter 4, isn't it? And he says, you know, that when you trust in him and you believe in him and out of your bellies shall flow rivers of living water. That which is concealed from the world but yet is open and apparent to the people of God. That we are satisfied with what God is and what God gives to us. He meets our needs. He gives us a feast. There in the midst of all our enemies. We have many enemies. There are many that are against the church of Jesus Christ. And yet for all of that, God says, look, you can still feast, you can still eat upon these particular things. They're things that He Himself has given us And then he goes on to say, isn't it? You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. It's a wonderful picture. Martin Luther spoke about this as coming up to the brim and then it just overflowing. I'm brimful, as it were. You know, you can only put a certain amount of liquid, can't you, into a certain container. And what happens after that container reaches its limit? What happens? It overflows. And that's the picture that's being described to us here. It's almost the superabundance of what God gives to us, isn't it? It's what we looked at this morning, isn't it? When you think about Jesus saying, isn't it? I have come that they might have life and that they might have it more abundantly. This overflowing, this abundance of life that he has given to us. More than what the world can do. Can they repress it? Can they, as it were, force it back, as it were? Of course they can't. This is the superabundant life that he has given to us. This feasting in the midst of our enemies. This drinking and enjoying what God has given to us. You see, because God is with us all through our lives, isn't he? In every situation. Something interesting about this psalm, you see, because it talks about God leading, doesn't it? Going before us. Talks as well, doesn't it, about God being with us. So there's the future. Here's the present. But it also tells us about the past as well, doesn't it? Your goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The interesting thing about it is this, isn't it? That if you take them all together, isn't it? The future, the present, the past. What does it tell us? It tells us that in every given situation, in all the problems and conflicts that we go through, in all the times of blessing that we experience, it's because God is with us. He's the omniscient God, isn't it? He is the omnipresent God. He doesn't exist in time and space like you and I. He is there before, he is there now, he is there behind. It's one of those things that we try to grasp and we understand about God. But yet the whole point and the purpose of it is this, to understand that no matter what situation, no matter what time and space we are moving in at this moment of time, God is with us. Past, present, future. Always. Your goodness and your mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And when you stop and you ponder this and you think, well, you can understand something of the need for God's mercy perhaps, because very often we can fail him, can't we? We have to go back to him, confess our sin. But God, who is infinitely gracious, forgives, doesn't he? Shows us mercy upon mercy and grace upon grace. But then his goodness follows us as well. And you know, I try to think sometimes of, well, I can understand why his mercy needs to follow me, but I find it hard sometimes to understand about his goodness. And you know, sometimes I think that perhaps his goodness follows me to mop up all the mistakes that I make along the way. You know, when I mess up on this and I mess up on that. You know, God says, well, you know, I'll deal with that. And I'll deal with this. And he removes the things that I've done which are not right, perhaps. Mistakes that I've made. Then God comes behind and says, oh, look, I'll mop up after you. I'll deal with the situation. Goodness and mercy follow me all the days of my life. Now it's interesting, isn't it? He doesn't talk about years and decades. But he talks about the intimacy of this relationship that is day in, day out. It's all the days of my life. You remember Jesus saying, isn't it? Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. You know, it's dealing with the day in, day out. It's not us, you and I, trying to deal with the future and what's lying around the corner, what's going to come tomorrow. We might think about it perhaps. But in that sense, we become existentialists, as it were. We're living for the moment. We're living for the day. We're living in this situation which I find myself now, at this moment of time. Not tomorrow, not what was before. We can't change or alter the past. God is gracious in the ways in which He deals with us. He remedies what our mistakes and our problems. We can't deal with the future because it's around the corner and we don't know what lies there. And we don't know what solutions God has in store for us. But I live at this moment. And I live in the moment. This God, goodness and mercy for me all the days of my life. Day in, day out, God is with me. The constancy of God. The promise that He will be with me and always be with me in all the situations of my life. In all what I find myself in. I am with you. Day in, day out. I don't go away for a season. I don't forget about you. I leave you to your own devices. But I am with you day in, day out. And as we struggle to get up in the morning, and we struggle through the day, is to remind ourselves, God is with me now at this moment of time. And you see, that once we lose that sense and that vision of what God is with us, all your comfort is drained. It's only in the remembrance and the reminder, isn't it, that He is with us. Day in, day out, until that time when we come to that place, isn't it? And then He says, all the days of my life, this life that is under the sun, this life. And then He says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You see, I mentioned this morning that this is a psalm for living and a psalm for dying. And this is true, isn't it? And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. In the following psalm, isn't it? Do you remember these verses? Verse 4, or verse 3 rather. Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord? Or who may stand in His holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol, nor sworn deceitfully, he shall receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. This is Jacob, the generation of those who seek Him, who seek your face. Entering into the house of the Lord, into that eternal habitation, isn't it? Now David has to speak of it like that, doesn't he? And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. But you remember Jesus? John 14. In my Father's house. Isn't it? In my Father's house. When He speaks about heaven, when He speaks about glory, He speaks about it, this is my Father's house. It's not only the Lord's house, as it were. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, isn't it, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself. In my Father's house. That's where I'm going to receive you. And I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever, says David. I'm going to that place, he says. That home, that place of security. This home which is the home of all of God's people. That place of the safest and most secure place that we can ever know. That place, isn't it, which is our home, where we can go, we can put our feet up, and we feel most comfortable. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And that's your destiny, and that's my destiny, if we trust Jesus. If Jesus is our good shepherd, all the way my Savior leads me. Leads me in this life, leads me into heaven and into glory. I have gone to prepare a place for you, he says. I have gone to open up to you the doors of heaven. That you and I, my friend, can enter in. This wonderful, this great shepherd of the sheep will have led us all the way. And on that day when we pass out of this world, it's to enter into that glory, isn't it? To be in the Father's house. to be with all of God's children, in that wonderful family of the people of God, all embracing one another, all loving one another, because God has loved us, and Christ has loved us. And because of that, we love one another, because of what He has done for us. Isn't this the vision that we should ever keep before us? The goal that is ever ours. To remind ourselves of God's providential dealings, yes, that He is dealing with us day in, day out, watching over us and caring for us, and ultimately bringing us to that home that goes beyond any home that we could ever imagine in this world. And when we shall be with all of God's people forever and forever. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever and ever and ever.